Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we are focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Drive On podcast. Today, as you can probably tell, it's a little bit of a different episode. The guest that I have is in person and also happens to be my wife. So nice and easy setup here. We just walk down the hall together and here we are. So today's episode, we're going to be talking about epilepsy and specifically epilepsy as it relates to veterans and how they're sometimes at a higher risk of being epileptic due to the nature of some of the injuries that they may receive, IED blasts, grenades, bombs, other things like that, that they have taken place throughout their service could put them at a higher risk of epilepsy. And my wife here, Vicky, she unfortunately has some personal experience with epilepsy, being an epileptic herself. And she's going to talk on the personal side of things about how epilepsy has affected her since becoming an epileptic later on in life. This is only a few years ago that she became epileptic, and how she's been able to cope and manage with that since coming up with that. So welcome.
Thanks. All the way across the driveway.
Yeah, right. So let's, first off, for people who maybe aren't familiar with epilepsy, what is epilepsy and what kind of is the background on what epilepsy is all about?
So before my becoming epileptic, I didn't know that like one in 26 people will actually have some sort of seizure in their life. And not all people who have a seizure become epileptic. So sometimes kids will have a seizure when they have a high fever. And so they can have a seizure once in their life and never have a seizure again. So that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to become epileptic. A lot of times people will have a trauma, like they will hit their head and have a seizure. Once again, that doesn't mean they're going to be epileptic, but they need to be careful because that brain trauma might cause them to have another seizure. So much is not known about seizures and the brain still. Like, we have all this technology and we still don't know a lot about the brain. Epilepsy is a neurological issue. There are tons of neurologists out there, and even though there are tons of neurologists, they still won't know everything about the brain. It's a crazy thing. So there are tons of different kinds of seizures. A lot of people think of the grand mal seizures, or that it used to be called the grand mal. Now it's called the clonic tonic. And that's when everybody starts shaking, they're out of it, and they just have that big earthquake shake is what I call it. I call it the Vicky Quakes, where you're totally out of it and you're shaking on the floor and people are like, put a spoon in their mouth. They're going to bite their tongue. Please don't do that. Turn the person on their side. That's what you want to do. But that's what people are thinking of when they think of a seizure. But there's also absence seizures where people are just not paying attention. You might see a person just kind of zone out and they don't know that they're out of it. So that's what people might have. So there's a ton of different kinds of seizures.
Yeah. And so I think that's important to point out because there's a lot of different symptoms that you might experience. So there right. might be someone who is having the full on shaking seizure, like you right. might be familiar with, like you might right. have seen in a movie or television right. show or something like that. But then, like you said, there might be also just someone who's just staring off into space and they're absent from reality right yeah. now, and you can't get them to just snap out of it.
Right.
And it may seem like they're maybe just ignoring you, but right. they're not. They are in a way, but yeah. not, because they're having that absence seizure and that could cause some problems. So, and like you said, like a lot of this is just a big unknown. Like, doctors don't know why people are having seizures.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, sometimes you can figure it out. A major head injury or other illnesses or diseases could yeah. trigger that type of thing. But sometimes, like, unfortunately, in your case, the doctors still don't know what caused your epilepsy. And so you are now, this is what, four years later?
Yeah.
And we still don't have an answer. Doctors went through all sorts of testing
yeah.
for various diseases, cancer, head injuries, drug usage, and everything came back negative.
Yeah.
Which in a way, you might be like, okay, well, good. Everything came back negative. But at the same time, we're sort of feeling like, at least if we had some positive come up, then we'd have something that we can tackle and we can go and try to address the root cause of this problem. Unfortunately, in your case, that's not the case. So in your situation, you actually tried to come off of your medication
yes.
that helps control the seizures, which ended up
triggering
another large seizure, which was unfortunate because we were all hopeful that this is a one-time deal. It happened and then, maybe it's not going to happen again, but
right.
Here we are and you're 4 years later, you're still on medication trying to control your seizures, right? So,
right.
It's unfortunate, but it does happen. You said one in 26 people will have a seizure of some sort throughout their life. So if you think about, think about just your neighborhood and the people who live
right.
on your street, even chances are pretty good that there'll be at least one of those people that's going to end up with a seizure at some point during their life. They may have already had it and they may not right. have one again, but so it's more common than I think a lot of people expect. Right.
Yeah. And going into the military, you can't be epileptic and going into the military. So a lot of people who are like me later in life, they end up having to deal with epilepsy. So it's a big change in their life. There's genetic people who end up from birth having epilepsy. There are some genetic components. I know some people who have had it since birth. And so they've dealt with it all their life. But then we have the people in the military who are like me, they end up with it later in life and they have to deal with this change, which is, it's a big change. And with that change comes medications and it can lead to some depression too. And you have to be very mindful of that. So that's just something to be careful.
It's a lifestyle change too, to some extent, because I know we live here in Arizona and every state has their own different rules.
Yep.
But in Arizona, after having a seizure, you were not allowed to drive for 3 months after that seizure. States are 6 months, a year, maybe even longer. I don't know all of the details on all of that, but that could be a pretty significant lifestyle change, especially if your job requires you to drive to and from work, or if you are a primary caregiver for your children and you have to pick them up from school and things like that. It may require some significant adjustment to your lifestyle.
Yep.
Not to mention the things like depression and other issues that will arise because of that, right? There's social issues, right? There's things where you may not be willing to go out to a nightclub or something like that where there might be flashing lights
right.
or things like that. So you might have to adjust some of your lifestyle, right?
Yeah, I was lucky. I had a lot of friends who were willing to come pick me up places and go places with me, but we were homeschooling and that was something I couldn't do with the kids. So a lot of the social network I had kind of disappeared, but I'm kind of an outgoing person. So I was able to kind of make a new outlet, but some people aren't. I had to depend on our parents to drive us around, which kind of was like going back to being 15 years old. And then I was riding my bike around, which, maybe that's not the best thing if you are epileptic or if you have traumatic brain injury, but I wore my helmet. So, then memory issues was a big thing too. People would tell me something and then 5 minutes later, I couldn't remember what was going on. And so that's another thing with epilepsy. You have issues with memory. And if you are trying to keep your job, usually remembering things is important.
Right.
That might be a problem. And medication can make you feel really woozy. One of the medications that I take is Topamax, and it's also known as Dopamax because it makes you feel dopey. And it really does. It took me a while. I did feel like a stroke victim with part of my face feeling numb. I had to work on migraine control. So I had a lot of headaches. And so luckily I had good doctors who were able to help me with migraines. And so I had to work on speaking again, because even reading was hard for me to read out loud to the kids. And so especially if you have a traumatic brain injury, that could be really hard to read out loud.
Right. And I was just going to say, I know I've talked to several people who had a traumatic brain injury who have said something very similar to that, where very basic things like just reading something and they can see the words on the paper or on the screen or whatever it is, but there's like a disconnect between what they're seeing and what the brain is telling them to say, and they're just unable to speak the words that they're reading.
Yeah.
They can understand the words in most cases, or I don't want to say in most cases, I don't really know, but in the cases that I've, of people I've talked to, they can understand what they're reading. They can read something and it says, you know, danger, do not enter. They know, okay, I'm not going to go in there. But if there was maybe a small child with them and they couldn't read, they wouldn't be able to read just even that short phrase and communicate that to the child. It's just the way the wires in your brain, if you will, like how they all connect, like they get crisscrossed and they're not working the way they used to.
Yeah. I explained it to my doctor. It was like twist ties. They all became undone and then they tried to twist tie back and they were not connecting to the right places. They kind of mangled back, but they were not twist tying back. And he goes, oh, I like that explanation. But it took me a while to come up with that analogy and explaining things to someone. I was talking to a stroke victim not too long ago, and he said to explain, make cookies to someone is extremely hard for him. He knows how to make cookies. He could make the cookies, but to explain it to someone else was really hard. And a couple months after I had my seizure, I signed up to do a public speaking event. And I told him you couldn't be in the room because I felt like the pressure was so immense. But I was like, I'm going to do this. And I did speaking onto my phone. I was running a blog at the time and I kept practicing over and over again. And it was hard. And they had one of the questions I was asked by one of the doctors was subtract 7 from 100. And the
you turned it down to 0.
Until I got down to 0. And I could not do it after 93. After that, I couldn't do it. But every day in the shower, I kept doing it. And then I did 100 minus 8, 100 minus 6. Every single day, I was doing it over and over again until I could do it because I was like, I'm going to make this happen. Because I was just determined. And I'm also a very competitive person. So I was making myself do it over and over.
It's like if you have a challenge and you're okay, I can't, there's something I can't do right now. I can't do it because I tried it and it failed. Now it's like, okay, well, screw that. I'm going to work at this until I can't get it wrong.
Right.
And I feel like that's almost like an exercise. Like, The way you might do a physical exercise where, you know, if I put a, you know, 100-pound weight in front of you and, you know, you haven't worked out at all ever in your life and you go to pick up that 100-pound weight, you're like, I just can't pick it up. It's too heavy. And then you're like, well, through that, I'm going to be able to pick this up. And you go to the gym and you do all the right things. You eat well, you exercise, you do all the that kind of stuff. Eventually, you're going to get to the point where you can pick that up. Not only can you pick it up, you can probably pick even more than that up.
Yeah.
And so I think in a way, it's similar to what you were doing with the mental exercises is you were training your brain how to do that and really how to think it all over again.
Yeah.
And maybe reconnecting some of the twist ties, like in that analogy that you used that came undone and now need to get back together in the right place. So the more you practice, the better eventually you'll end up being. It definitely wasn't an overnight thing.
No, it took me probably 2 years to get back to about where I was. And before I got sick, because I mean, I had a cold that kind of, it seems like maybe led into it. I was training for a half marathon. And then when I left the hospital, I could barely walk. And so when when the whole CVID thing happened, I ran a half marathon again.
Yeah.
And so I was able to do that. And I mean, I didn't run fast. I mean, I haven't really ran fast since high school, but I was able to accomplish that. And so it was working towards it and not giving up, just
working.
And I think it's possible. You just have to keep working towards that. But there are some times where I have like fears and, you know, I've had the auras. Auras are when you have the sense that something is going to happen, that you're going to have a seizure. And everyone's auras are different based on your seizure status. Like I have what's called focal seizures and I see lights or I see things. Like when I was in the hospital, I thought that you were an elf and the doctor was an elf. And I asked if Santa was there. And so people were like, okay, she's going to have a seizure.
To clarify, like what was happening there was you were seeing like Christmas lights around. Like it was just, you know, how the lights kind of like they dot around in a line and they're not a straight line, but that's kind of what you were seeing in that. And so to someone whose mind isn't working 100%,
yeah,
it's easy to understand why someone would be like, okay, it looks like Christmas, so maybe these people are elves. And, you know, in like full transparency here, when you first came out of, they put you in a medically induced coma. When you first came out of that coma, you couldn't speak. Mm-hmm. Like you physically could, the words wouldn't come out of your mouth.
Right.
And I even gave you a piece of paper to write down and you couldn't write. I don't know if we even still have the piece of paper.
I saved it. Yeah.
I know I saved it. Yeah. I'm just not sure where that paper is, but it was really just like scribbles on the paper. There was no actual letters on there. And so I don't know what made you think to do this, but you started using sign language and you started just signing the letters of what you wanted to say. And I knew that there was a problem because you knew that I don't know sign language. Even though I have hearing problems, I don't know sign language. And yet you still decided to, the communication method of choice was sign language. And I was like, oh, this is not going to work out too well. So I quickly Googled American Sign Language, the letters on my phone, and I pulled it up and I grabbed a piece of paper. And as you were signing, you signed the letters WHEREISMYHUSBAND. Where is my husband? And I was like, well, this is worse than I thought because I am your husband and I'm standing right here. I'm the only person in the room right now. And you're signing this to me. I was like, oh crap, what am I going to be dealing with? And so, you know, from my point of view, not to take anything away from what was going on with you or with anybody else who's going through this in their own lives. But from my point of view, I was like, oh shit, this is more serious than I thought. And I thought it was pretty serious at the time. Like when we brought you to the hospital and we admitted you, the doctors were asking me all these sorts of questions, like what kind of medications did you take? What medications or any allergies that you might have? You know, very basic things that I know the answers to all of these questions, but at the time it was so stressful for me that I didn't have those answers. I couldn't communicate it to the doctor because my mind was on you and how you were going to be and what was going on. I couldn't answer those questions. And so one way to mitigate all of that stuff to help us in the event of another future issue is on our phones, iPhones, I know have it, Android phones have this setting where you can set like emergency information where you can list medications, you can list allergies, you can, you know, emergency contact people. So you can list your spouse or your parent or kid or someone who you trust that you'd want to be notified in the event of an emergency. So that way, should something, doesn't have to be a seizure, it could be anything. This is like such a widespread usage. It could be a car accident type of thing. That the EMTs or even the nurses and the doctors at the hospital can take your phone and they have access to this. On your phone's lock screen, it says emergency something, whatever it says, and they can open that up and it'll give them all this information, what medications you take, your blood type, your date of birth, where you live, all that stuff that you could possibly want to give to a doctor. Right. It could all be right there. So we made it a point to make sure that our phones are up to date with all of that information so that should something happen again, and I can't remember what medications you're allergic to or foods or other things that you might be allergic to, or even what medications you're taking.
Yeah.
I don't have to remember that. Now it's on the phone. I can open it up and I have it there. Now, of course, it's good if I do remember that, because if you're in a car accident, your phone is destroyed, then that's, you know, not really useful. But it's good to have that sort of backup there. Real peace of mind knowing that we have that available to us. So should we need it, it's there.
Yeah.
So I want to switch gears a little bit. I know we talked a lot about your situation and how we've dealt with this stuff, but service members, veterans, they're at a higher risk of having epilepsy, having seizures because of the exposures that they have to, like I said in the beginning, IEDs or other bombs or explosions.
Yep.
Those could cause, even if you aren't necessarily blown up, right? Just the concussive energy from the blast could rattle your brain.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Gunshots in the enclosed environment, maybe even, I don't know. I don't, depending on maybe the caliber of the bullet, how close you are to it, or, you know, even taking a shot off a helmet or something like that. That type of thing could happen. You know, TBIs or a big issue with service members and veterans. So you've done some research on this. What is some of the stuff that's being done for veterans with regards to seizures and epilepsy, like either through the VA or other areas like that? So what's being done there?
So there is an epilepsy center of excellence at the VA, and epilepsy.com actually has some information too. And the thing is, you might not see something like right away with epilepsy. It can be a couple of years and then something happens. So if you have some sort of trauma, you want to let people know right away because it needs to be watched. So you want to make sure that you are registering any like TBI that you have, anything that you have with the VA, and let them know that you have some sort of issue.
And I know it's one of those things that if you were in the military, your NCOs were telling you all the time, document every single little thing. Doesn't matter how small you think it is. It could be a cold. It could be, you know, a little bump on the head and, you know, maybe a little brawl that you might've had in the barracks or something like that, or whatever, like document, hopefully not that, right? But document everything, because it might come up years later. And if there's no documentation, you know, just knowing how the VA works, you know, after you get out of the military, they're going to say, okay, well, is this a service-connected injury? And, you know, did this happen during the time of your service? And if you have no proof of it, they're just going to, in a lot of cases, just assume that it didn't happen. So, you know, go get checked out and keep documentation. I know stuff goes in your medical file in the military. And this is for all the currently serving service members. There's stuff that goes into your medical file, but that file could get lost. It could get misplaced. It could get whatever. Keep a copy of everything for yourself. Take that folder, copy every single piece of paper that's in there. Anything new that's about to go in there, ask for a copy. Get a copy and keep it yourself in a safe place. Scan it onto your computer if you can. Store it in multiple locations. Keep the physical hard copies, scanned copies. Keep it, store it in on your computer. Store it on an external drive, so that way if your computer crashes, you have it in another location. Store it everywhere. So that way, when something happens down the line, you know, hopefully it doesn't, but if it does, you have that documentation. And it's super important to have that, not just for brain-related conditions, for any sort of condition, because they could lead to other things that maybe you don't even think about right now. You know, it could be, you know, when I was in the service, I shot rifles and ended up with ringing in my ear. So I thought, oh, okay, well, I've been to loud concerts before, that this ringing will go away eventually. Well, now we're, 14 years later or so, and it's still ringing to this day right now, and it hasn't gone away. I never even thought to go get that documented. Get this stuff documented. Go to get that done. So, all right, that was a little
piece. Yeah. And so, yeah, make sure if you could put that in the show notes, the epilepsy.va.gov.
Epilepsy.va.gov. No, that will be in the show notes, definitely. Yeah.
So, and epilepsy.com also has a lot of resources. That's where they do a lot of research and a lot of stuff. You can find a lot of things. Mayo and Barrow are also two hospitals that have a ton of information, and they have a lot of neurological research done.
so great resources. So the VA, epilepsy.va.gov, epilepsy.com, the Mayo Clinic, Barrow, they all have a lot of research and a lot of doctors who are basically dedicated their careers to researching this stuff. And while we don't know everything about the brain and how epilepsy works, we know a lot more than we used to.
Yeah. They're not going to give you lobotomies or send you out. I always say to the kids, like, if I was growing up in like the 1700s and I had seizures, they probably think I was some sort of witch. So it's a good thing. Like, that mom is not in the 1700s anymore.
We've made progress. But I mean, when you think about these things, nobody is out there like looking for seizures. Like, how do I come up with this illness? Like, it's just one of those things that happens to people.
Yeah.
Either through a brain injury or an illness, or
it can be a side effect of some medications, unfortunately. So
it could be something like that as well. But it's like, it sucks because it just happens. And no one is asking for this type of thing. It just happens. And then you end up with issues or lights or sounds, even alcohol, stress, lack of sleep.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yep. Illnesses, other medication, even smells can trigger a seizure in people. And so you have all these issues. We wanted to bring this up. We wanted to do this episode. Not only is it something that's near and dear to us, but you know, November, when this episode's coming out, Epilepsy Awareness Month. Woo-hoo. And so we wanted to kind of kick off the month with something regarding epilepsy, because you know, we've seen just how quickly it can affect people. You know, the way it's affected you, and we've known several other people who have had epilepsy, but not had, but they have epilepsy. Yep. And you know, it can lead to things like depression. It can lead to you know, isolation.
Very much isolation, unfortunately, especially in kids and service members. And because already service members seem to be, isolation is when they get back home, and then this just compounds it, and it shouldn't compound it. You know, there's so many treatments available with like medications. Unfortunately, sometimes you have to take medication. And it's something, you know, I took medication when I first got diagnosed, and the first medication was not right for me. And I did have to speak up. I'm very much a vocal person. If you haven't realized, I'm vocal. And one of the medications they gave me caused hives. And I had to say, no, this isn't right. And they're like, oh, it's okay. If it's not right for you, speak up and, you know, just say, no, this isn't right. And then they put me on other medications, and I did not have any more seizures, and I had MRIs. My brain looked like it improved. So I talked with my doctors, and they said, hey, you know, if you want to try, well, I brought it up that I wanted to try to go medication free. And unfortunately, it didn't work. I had some seizures, and I said, okay, I need to go back on the medication. But there's a lot of different medications, and not every medication is right for every person. So there's a lot of different kinds out there. There's newer medications. There's older medications. You have to see what's right for you. You know, if you're on other medications, just make sure that they are interacting.
Yeah. And your doctor should be able to help you out with that.
Yep.
Because, you know, if we're not all pharmacists or doctors and we don't know all of these things, you can look it up. You can look up which medications you're on and look for interaction warnings and stuff like that. You can look that up, but your doctor should be able to help you out with that. And just make sure that they are up to date on whatever it is that you are taking, you know, and just like there are different medications that will work differently in each person, the side effects will vary.
Yes.
For each medication. And unfortunately, all the medications are going to have some sort of side effects. You know, it just is how it works. And you can also look that up too. So you can look at, you know, if you're prescribed a certain medication, just Google it and look it up for the side effects and see what you might be getting yourself into. And that way, you know, if you start breaking out in a rash or something, that might be a side effect. And then you'll be like, okay, well, I can attribute it to this medicine. It's assuming that you aren't doing anything else differently, you know, with your life. So, you know, there's a lot of different side effects, a lot of different medications. So if you try one and it's like, oh, that's not going to work for me because I'm not going to live with a rash throughout, you know, from now until the end of my life, that would just be a miserable thing to do. Just, you know, talk to your doctor and they'll hook you up with something else. Let's see. So I guess another thing, especially for the people who are living with someone who has a seizure, is to talk about, like, what do you do when someone is having a seizure? And over time, if you're dealing with someone who's epileptic, eventually you're going to figure out, okay, now I know what to do. This is something that you're used to. And like you said, there are a lot of different types of seizures. So the what to do for each seizure is going to be different. Sometimes you may not have to do anything. Sometimes you may just need to just sit with the person, make sure that they're safe until they come out of the seizure.
Right.
Sometimes you may have to do something that could potentially save that person's life. Because I know when you had your most recent seizure, you had a situation where it was almost like foaming at the mouth, but you might see.
I'm charming.
No, I'm quite sharing this with everybody.
Really selling.
I know. Well, I got to keep it to me. So any like that stuff is, unfortunately, it's something that you choke on.
Right.
And so,
absolutely.
So I know a lot of us being service members who are listening to this podcast are veterans. You know, we've learned some of the basic first aid type things that you would do if dealing with someone in a situation like that. But, you know, try to roll the person on their side if you can. In this most recent seizure that you had, you were sitting on a chair in our living room, a recliner kind of chair. And I literally dragged you off in the chair and brought you down onto the floor and turned you over onto your side. So that way, should that start happening, you wouldn't choke on whatever that is that it ends up there, right? But that's like one thing that you might need to do.
And you said, put anything into your mouth.
Yeah, you said that earlier. Don't put anything in people's mouth. A lot of times people are like, oh, you got to put a wooden spoon in their mouth so that they don't bite their tongue. Problem is, when someone's having a seizure, every muscle in their body is clenched at its tightest.
So tense.
To the point where if I wanted to put something in your mouth, I wouldn't be able to open your jaw. And even if I did, like if my fingers were in the way, like I'd be afraid that you would bite my finger. Like it's that tense.
Or for days after, it must have been the most intense workout, because for days after it felt like I had been like ripped.
Yeah.
It was a very good workout.
Well, and as an example, just a few weeks ago, there was a football player for the Miami Dolphins who had a serious head injury, a blow to the head. Actually happened, I think, one after another. Like one week he had an injury to his head and he got up and he was stumbling around. He barely walked.
Yeah.
And then the second week he got hit in the head, and almost immediately you saw his fingers were just crunched up. I made a joke and it's not really funny, but it was like, it almost looked like he was trying to make a gang sign that like no one really knew like what that gang was or anything like that. But it's like, he had no control over it. It just, his brain, and I'm not saying he had a seizure. I'm not a doctor. I don't know exactly what happened. It was some neurological thing that happened in his brain, but his hands just kind of seized up. And I'm sure other parts of his body did too. Maybe just couldn't see it all. But if you were trying to straighten out his fingers at that point, probably wouldn't be able to, because it was just so tense.
And he's probably a very strong dude.
I'm sure. And being like a quarterback, his hands and his arms and everything like that are probably super strong. So, you know, I wouldn't suggest trying to do that. Just like let it happen, I would think, is the best way to do it.
I did have like warnings, and people who have had multiple seizures, like I did have a warning that it was coming. And so I did take my rescue medication that day, but it wasn't enough. So if people who are epileptic, they might have a warning that it's coming, or an aura, as it's medically called. So, and it could be like an intense fear. A lot of people will say it's an intense fear, or they'll feel sick to their stomach. And unfortunately, with people who are in the military, and this is me projecting a little bit, coupled with PTSD, that might be even more intense. And so I just feel so bad. Like I will have this intense fear that something horrible is going to happen. And that could be mistaken for a PTSD sign too. And so that's something you probably want to talk with a therapist or a doctor about, like how to tell the differences between those.
Right. And you were talking about, to me before we were recording, you were talking about how there have been times when you've had a fear over inanimate objects, like the nightstand next to our bed, or the shampoo bottle, or something that is completely harmless.
Innocuous, completely.
Yeah, like nothing is going to happen with those things. It's not like you're staring down the barrel of a gun or something like that. You have no reason to be fearful of these things, but you still just have this fear. And so that is, you know, a good example of what would be classified as something that could be that aura leading up to a seizure.
Yeah.
The other thing too that I wanted to mention, especially talking about veterans and service members who might be experiencing some of this stuff, is the use of service dogs. Because
absolutely,
I know myself and a lot of other veterans, we love dogs. I mean, it's just we got a soft spot in our heart for dogs, and you know, they are truly man's best friend. They will do whatever to make you happy, safe, whatever. And so, you know, people do have service dogs who can detect seizures. And when you have a dog like that, it can help you, especially if you have a job where you need to be up on ladders, or before you get up on that ladder, maybe the dog is noticing that you're about to have a seizure. It's like, okay, well, I'm not going to go up on that ladder right now because I don't want to have a seizure fall off. Or if you drive a lot for your job, if you have a dog in the car with you and it detects that you're about to have a seizure, you can pull over, get to a safe space. So that way you're not having a seizure while you're behind the wheel driving.
Right.
You're on a highway, anywhere really, for that matter.
Yeah.
So service dogs can be incredibly helpful. with detecting a seizure. But I know you have a story of our dog who was not trained for this whatsoever. It's just a dog that we lived with for, at that point, it was like 9 years, I think. We lived with her all this time, and she got to know us and know our body chemistry, our smells, and all this kind of stuff that goes along with it. And I'll let you talk.
And yeah. She just laid down next to me, and she just was, okay, you know, this is, you need to, like, be calm. And she just knew, and that was Roxy, and she just knew something was up. And I knew, okay, she's laying down next to me, there's something going on. And she passed away in 2020. And then our new puppy is in May, when I had our seizure, Liberty, she kind of started acting funny when I started feeling lost, and she started laying down next to me.
Right.
So I think, like, they already can sense if something's going on, and they're puppies, but they can, I think they're already starting to understand what's going on.
Right. And
amazing.
It was described to me a while ago, and I'll try to call the episode that this was discussed in, but we had another episode on this podcast a couple of years ago, and we talked about service dogs, and not just with regards to seizures, but, you know, how they can help for things like PTSD and all sorts of other things. But the service dogs, the way it works is, like, from my understanding and my recollection of this, is our bodies are giving off certain smells, and dogs have way better smells than we'll ever have. Sense of smell, I should say, and they can detect those changes in your body chemistry. Like, the thing that's about to trigger that seizure will have a different smell, and it triggers something in the dog that says, hey, this is different. This is not supposed to be happening. So what's going on? And they get concerned.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like with anything, if you were to look at someone and they had this, like, green, gross growth coming out of their face, you'd be a little concerned about that person. You'd be like, oh, like, can we get you some help? Can we take you to the doctor and get you some help? Right. And so that's the way I think of it with the dog, is the dog will sense something that's not green and gross, but smells different. And maybe it smells gross. I don't know. Maybe it smells off to them or whatever. And they're like, okay, well, this isn't right. And this person needs help. So,
yeah,
you know, there's only so much a dog can do as far as helping. Like, dog's not going to put you in the back of the car and drive you to the hospital, but they can warn you that the seizure is about to happen. So that way you can get yourself to a safe place. You can lie down on the floor, or, you know, get some pillows, you know, around you. So that way you're not going to hit your head on a hard floor. For example, if you're on a tile floor, wood floor, or something like that, you can get something soft around you. So that way, knowing that the seizure is about to come, you can get yourself to a safe place. So I think, you know, service dogs are incredibly useful. I'm sure there are organizations out there who train service dogs for seizures. I would know any particularly off the top of my head. I'll try to look up a couple of those and add those to the show notes as well. But, you know, that's something that you can look into as well.
Well, usually they do like to have the dog that has been with the family, or a dog that has been already incorporated. Yeah, like, from what I understand, you know, they don't want to have a dog that's just, you buy that dog from that.
They don't an off-the-shelf kind of dog. They want you to train your dog, is what, yeah, I believe I understand as well. And,
yeah.
And the nice thing is, from my understanding, is any dog can be a service dog. As long as they are able to perform a specific function for the person that they're serving, then they could be considered a service dog. So it doesn't have to be, you know, a certain breed or a certain type of dog. It could be any dog, really, as long as they're capable of performing those functions.
Right,
so,
right.
So that's, I think, an important thing to think about too, is, you know, how you deal with these things. Because in some cases, it may not go away. It may be something that you have to manage and live with for the rest of your life. And so, you know, there's medications that help manage these things, service dogs, you know, modifying your lifestyle. There's a lot of things that go into it.
Yeah.
But there are also resources available. So you don't have to figure all of this stuff out on your own. And you can get help from various resources that are available, which, again, I'll try to link to as many of them as I can in the show notes.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Absolutely. And, you know, take it one step at a time. You know, don't give up. Try to find some resources. There's groups online too that are available. That's been helpful for me navigating this. There's a lot of people who get epilepsy later in life, you know, so we're not alone that, you know, it does spring up on people, you know, in their 30s and their 40s, like all of a sudden, oh goodness, I'm just dealing with this neurological disorder. So it's, you're not alone that you're just, oops, one day this happened. You know, it's not a punishment. It's just something that happens. And, you know, sometimes you might feel like, what the heck did I do to deserve this? You know, it sometimes can't feel like it sucks, but, you know, get a new lease on life and figure out, okay, one step at a time. You always say, you know, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
One bite at a time. Yeah, that's how you do it.
It's going to suck.
That's it. It's a big elephant.
A big elephant, but, you know. But you can't chew off the whole thing. So you got to take things one step at a time, try to eliminate possibilities. So if there's environmental things around, you know, try to see if removing some of those environmental things that, you know, maybe a toxic exposure to certain things maybe could have triggered a seizure in you. So you can try to eliminate some of those things as possibilities. So there's a lot of things, but I think importantly, talk to a doctor who knows a lot about this. Either Vicky or I are doctors. We're not experts in this, even though we've dealt with this for the last few years and had to live with it. But by no means are we experts. We know a lot about what you're going through, but we couldn't possibly talk to what everybody is going through. So
it's different for everybody.
Yeah. And again, it's different for everybody. The doctors are going to be your best bet. If you're enrolled in VA healthcare, if you have VA benefits that you are able to do that with, you can make an appointment with your VA, local VA, and try to get checked out for that and see if they can make a referral to a neurologist. If you're not enrolled in VA healthcare, you mentioned Mayo Clinic has been great for you. Arrow was another one that was recommended to you. We don't have any personal experience with that, but they're usually pretty good as well with regards to epilepsy. So, you know, check out those types of people, or those types of facilities in your area if you don't have access to, that you have VA or other local things like that. So else do you want to add?
No, I think that's about it.
Okay. Well, sounds good. So thank you, everybody, for taking the time to listen. Hopefully, this was helpful, educational for you as we kick off Epilepsy Awareness Month. But, you know, we wanted to make sure that everyone has some awareness about what epilepsy is, what seizures are, how they can come up in different ways in people, and that there's no one-size-fits-all solution to any of this. So, you know, if you need additional resources, feel free to reach out. If it's not in the show notes, if you're looking for something else, feel free to reach out and we will do our best to get you the right resources, or, you know, check out your local VA as well. They may be able to help. Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to support the show, please check out Scott's book, Surviving Son, on Amazon. All of the sales from that book go directly back into this podcast and work to help veterans in need. You can also follow the Drive On Podcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts.